It is time for our monthly catch-up with RNIB's campaigns team, looking at some of the big projects underway at the moment, some news, and of course, encouraging you to get involved and become a volunteer campaigner. And we have two topics we are going to chat about today. So joining me from our London studios, we have Costa Asprew. A couple of big topics to talk about today. We've got health, and we're also chatting about transport.
That's right, yes, and as you said, two big issues. So starting off with transport, being able to travel to make the journeys we need or want to is crucial for independence. We know that blind and partially sighted people rely on public transport to get around, and that's why it's so important that public transport is accessible and inclusive. With that in mind, we had some important news from the Department for Transport in July, which announced a new £20 million government fund available for stations needing accessibility improvements. And we're joined now by Hugh Huddy, RNIB Policy and Campaigns Manager for Inclusive Journeys.
Hi.
Could you tell us more about what this government fund is for and why it's needed?
It's part of the Inclusive Transport Strategy. It's a strategy for making everything accessible to those of us who are disabled. And anyone who uses transport, like me with visual impairment, there's a lot of improvements that need to be made. And the strategy puts money aside, and as you said, this is £20 million to adjust stations, railway stations, to make them accessible. So what that could mean, the tactile platform edges, which I know I rely on, and a lot of other people do too, to know when you're near the edge of the platform. It's only on some stations, and what we want is for it to be on all stations, and for there to be no debate about that. The business is trying to get them fixed, which involves public money, and that involves securing accessibility for those of us who are visually impaired over and above other disability groups who also are looking for changes for their particular needs. So it's by no means a simple matter. The job is to negotiate and to promote and to emphasise why we need these changes. The changes we need are things like assistance. So when you rock up at a station, one of the most common problems is you don't have anyone to show you down to the platform or to show you where the ticket office is to get a ticket, or these days to operate, you know, self-service ticket machines. There's the announcements on platforms, which we rely on to know what trains are coming and what's leaving what platform. Very often they're not as fully adequate as they should be, and often they're being cut in some places. And then the visibility, if you're partially sighted, and the tactile visibility, if I can call it that, if like me you're blind and use a cane or a guide dog, that doesn't just mean the platform edges, it means finding your way to stairs, lifts, and in and out of the station. So there's a lot of different issues here.
Hugh, you like yourself, I'm blind and I use a guide dog or a cane sometimes. And the figure mentioned was £20 million. That doesn't sound a lot when you think about the amount of stations that are there, especially the tactile paving, which I'd say is probably more of a health and safety thing than just an accessibility thing as well. It's crucial to have that. And when you think that a lot of stations are unmanned as well, you know, it doesn't send a lot of money there to do that, and perhaps there's a bigger picture that has to be looked at here.
Exactly. I mean, £20 million is a small amount of money. There are thousands of railway stations in the UK. Anyone who followed that amazing thing last year, which was called All the Stations, where a couple of people just visited every railway station in the whole of the UK. They actually went on the train, went through every station. 2,600, something like that. It was 2,500 stations. So when you divide that into 20 million and you think how much adjusting each platform cost, and that's just one adjustment, when you're thinking that's just visual impairment, what about all wheelchair users and all the other disability groups as well? So when you put it in the context, it shows that we, all of us who are part of RNIB, we've got a lot of work to do.
And I suppose that brings us to the question, what is RNIB doing in response to this government announcement?
Well, as always, this is part of our Inclusive Journeys strategy to make sure our journeys from where we start off at the beginning of the day, stepping out of our house onto a pavement that may be these days shared with a cycleway, to trying to find your way to a crossing, which might have been taken away and replaced with a courtesy crossing that's very hard for us to use, to getting to a bus stop or a railway station that then has no accessibility provisions when you get there. This is all part of an inclusive journey, and we are engaging with the government and lobbying with the government, and what we need the most is to know where the problems are. Now, we know where they are, but of course we do, but when we rock up to go and meet government ministers and senior Department for Transport officials, their attitude is, we've done an awful lot already, just tell us what other little tweaks need to be made. And of course we said, no, hang on, it's not a small thing, there's a lot needs to be done. And they'll often say, tell us where the worst examples are, and that's where we'll put the money in. And that's where we need all of us to come together. So if people can report into the campaigns team at RNIB and tell us what's going on out there, where are the difficulties, and we need to know that these are places you actually use, we can say, well, we personally use these spaces, they're very difficult, they haven't got XYZ. What's the XYZ? That's what we want to know. Where are they and how does it affect you? We'll log it down and then we take that to the government officials and say, that's what we need to solve.
That doesn't just stop at things like train stations, as you say, Hugh. You think about the operators as well, train operators and bus operators. The ability to have talking announcements has been around for a long time. That's been a really slow move, probably more on trains now than perhaps on buses. You know, the Transport Bill is saying that new buses should have this. But in terms of the finances, it's getting that money there and the government finding that money to make these changes. Is that probably trickier than getting to understand what the changes are in the first place?
You're right. Getting them to understand the issues is actually the easiest bit. I mean, we obviously have to go and get them to understand them, because remember, there's lots of other lobby groups and organisations also putting their cases as well. So to be fair to the officials, they've got a hell of a lot on their plate, and we need to make sure that what's on their plate is clear and they can do something about it. So there's the problem of how do you actually find the money to put announcements in everywhere and make sure everything's funded. MPs are very busy with other things, as everyone will understand, and it's just getting at someone's ear to come and raise this and ask a parliamentary question. And then the parliamentary question comes back half answered, because really not a great deal of work's been done on it, because there's so much else going on in this country at the moment that's not to do with this. So that is the battle, Alan, and I think the way we win it is being really razor sharp in what we're asking for and giving good evidence, because it's impossible to ignore when someone is running up to the edge of a platform or can't find their way onto a train and just says, look, we can't use this service because it's not accessible, these are the reasons why, can someone solve it? That is actually a lot easier for us to then take to the ministers or the officials, who then say, well, that's the person in charge, they need to solve it. And then it does get a timeline and it gets an action plan. And that's what we need to work to.
How can people make their voices heard then if their local station needs accessibility improvements?
Making your voice heard starts with getting in touch with the train operator or the owner of the station. Some operators run the stations and some don't. I think the best thing is if there's a significant issue, do get in touch with us, because we can check, we can do those searches that are necessary, and also we're used to doing this. The most important thing is obviously to get your issue logged with us and emailed to that operator and make sure it's worded in such a way as to be dealt with by either their complaints process or their inclusion consultation process. And that needs a little bit of research. So if you're not used to doing that, or there isn't a local society near you who's used to doing that and you feel confident we'll be able to do that, then you can contact us and we'll also help you to resolve it, because it's not just a matter of what you'll get back is usually a load of flannel stuff which says we take disability very seriously, you know where I'm going with this, we want to do everything we can, and we try to take everyone's views into account, so thanks for your feedback. That's usually what it says. Our job is to say, okay, we know that's what they'll reply with, so let's make sure we pitch the complaint or the issue in such a way that they will find it hard just to use flannel just to get rid of it.
And then when people raise the issues directly with their station and with us as well, does that increase the chance that maybe this government fund can be used to address some of those accessibility issues?
That's a really good link you're making there. I hadn't thought about that. Yes, it does, because what it enables us to do is, if we can go armed with these issues and certainly the local story with evidence, these are real scenarios, not just made up ones, that's what helps us persuade officials to do something about it. Officials don't like dealing with theoretical stuff. They like dealing with facts and figures, and anyone listening, you're the one who have these facts and figures, and you, in a way, you hold the key.
And we will, of course, give you the contact details later if you want to get in touch around transport or any campaigns issue. And we're going to move from transport on to health now. This is getting accessible information, Costa.
blind and partially sighted people should be able to receive accessible information from NHS and social care services. This includes receiving information in alternative formats, such as in audio, braille, or large print. But we do hear from people who continue to receive health information which is not accessible. Michael Tupper from Clitheroe in the northwest of England is registered blind and has continued to receive inaccessible NHS information despite requesting information in large print, which he can then read with a magnifier. Unfortunately, East Lancashire Hospitals Trust routinely sends Michael inaccessible letters and leaflets, and he received 14 of these in the last year alone. This has included important appointment details, questionnaires, and confidential health information. He's worried that he might miss important details or an appointment, and at times he has had to rely on a neighbour to read potentially sensitive information for him. He's informed staff at the hospital many times that he needs large print information, and even back in 2015 he had taken part in the Hospital Trust's pilot scheme for providing accessible information. As a last resort, he is now working with us to take legal action. So in England, the NHS Accessible Information Standard, that's the NHS Information Standard 1605, has been in effect since August 2016. It lays out how NHS services should be providing accessible information, and it applies to all organisations that offer NHS services, including GP practices, hospitals, dentists and pharmacies. And of course, a legal win would send a clear signal that other NHS services need to step up and provide accessible information if they're not already doing so. For anyone who wants to request accessible NHS information or who want to challenge a situation where they're not receiving accessible information, we have an NHS information toolkit which can help. It includes guidance on what you can do to request accessible information, how to complain if you've requested it but you're not yet receiving it, and it includes information on further steps you can take if the issue still isn't resolved after you've taken those other steps, like taking a legal case, for example, or asking the Care Quality Commission, the CQC, to investigate.
And we'll keep you up to date on that legal action as well. Just finally, Costa, then, if people would like to get involved in campaigning or find out more about the toolkits, and we've been talking about transport and accessible health information today, what's the best way to do that?
We have some great resources to help you, and we can put you in touch with your local regional campaigns officer as well if you'd like to campaign to make your local area more accessible. For more information on the RNIB Accessible Health Information Toolkit, you can speak to the RNIB Sight Loss Advice Service on 0303 123 9999, and for more information on any of our campaigns work, you can call in on the same number or email campaigns@rnib.org.uk.
And do get involved. We're back again next month with more news from the campaigns team. For Costa and to Hugh, thanks to both of you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks very much, Alan.
Thank you.